recorded live.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Mother, should I trust the government?
Sad when a mother has to speak the words that condemn her own son. But I couldn't allow them to believe that I would commit murder. They'll put him away now, as I should have years ago. He was always bad.
Can't you see me? Yeah, mama, mama, mama.
Come back to me, Mother. I want you to.
Alex, not you.
Can we go to the park and then to the zoo and have two ice cream cones? Oh, boy. Go away, lady. We don't need you anymore.
Open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. Next, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone. And I'm Lynn. I'm your host for today. And I'm here with my co-host, Bobby, and Robert. Hello, folks. How are you?
Hello.
Hi.
Hey,
and
Lynn's the mother of the show today, aren't you,
Lynn? Yes, I am. Yes, I am. And unfortunately, we're missing Dave, our dear Dave. He is at a wedding, though. He's having a great time. Getting drunk and having a wonderful time dancing and falling over and everything. So
yeah, don't fall over, Dave. Be careful of that
principle
there.
Yeah, be careful, Dave. be nice. Hey, he should send us all a piece of wedding cake. But yeah, we'll miss him today, but I'm glad he's having a good time. And we have a couple of guests here today. We have Lewis. Hi, Lewis.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, good to have you here. And we have Sunny, who is in our chat room and a regular member to our Yahoo discussion Twilight Zone group. And so good to have her here. And today we are going to be discussing the episode Young Man's Fancy. And I'm going to give it over to Robert for the opening clip.
Yeah, this is another long opening. It's like a minute 23.
Yes,
not as long.
Indeed.
Rod felt he had to get everything out in the open, so
oh, yeah.
Here he is.
And now, Mr. Serling.
You're looking at the house of the late Mrs. Henrietta Walker. This is Mrs. Walker herself, as she appeared 25 years ago. And this, except for isolated objects, is the living room of Mrs. Walker's house, as it appeared in that same year. The other rooms, upstairs and down, are much the same. The time, however, is not 25 years ago, but now. The house of the late Mrs. Henrietta Walker is, you see, a house which belongs almost entirely to the past. A house which, like Mrs. Walker's clock here, has ceased to recognize the passage of time. Only one element is missing now, one remaining item in the estate of the late Mrs. Walker. Her son, Alex, 34 years of age and up till 20 minutes ago, the so-called perennial bachelor. With him is his bride, the former Miss Virginia Lane. They're returning from the city hall in order to get Mr. Walker's clothes packed, make final arrangements for the sale of the house, lock it up, and depart on their honeymoon. Not a complicated set of tasks, it would appear, and yet the newlywed Mrs. Walker is about to discover that the old adage, "You can't go home again," has little meaning in the Twilight Zone.
Wow.
Like, well, it's a good life.
Oh, yeah. It gets the whole thing out in the open there. Yes, you have a newly married husband and wife, and then they return to the husband's late mother's home where he grew up. And the plan is to get the house ready to sell. So, you know, he finds it very difficult to leave the place. He can't sell it. He says he can't sell it. He can't bear the thought of selling it. And once in the house, his new wife, Virginia, or as he calls her, Virge, she's bothered because there are constant reminders that Mama is somehow present in the house and vying for her son's loyalty. So eventually, Alex becomes so engrossed in childhood memories that his mother reappears and he becomes a child again. And his wife then at the end accuses his mother of causing this, but the mother says it was not her doing. She says, "I did not do this. This was not my doing." Or however,
I do not drink wine.
I hear nothing.
Is that your Hungarian accent there, Lynn?
I hear nothing. I see nothing. And the husband, who now becomes a young boy again, a child, he tells his wife to go away. He says, "Go away, lady. We don't need you anymore." And then, you know, Virginia, she's struck with horror, and she flees the house, leaving her boy/husband and his ghostly mother behind. And, oh, wow, you know. But this episode, without a doubt, certainly has one of Rod Serling's longest opening narrations. I mean, he really felt he needed to set this story up for the viewers, and there's nothing wrong with that. I always enjoy Rod's narrations, but he really dwelled on this one, just like he did with It's a Good Life. Just really going into it, and that's unusual. There are very few that are like that. But, you know, young man's fancy, and it tells the tale of a completely obsessive mama's boy and his new bride. And, I don't know, the new bride, Virginia, Phyllis Thaxter. She played her, and she specialized there in agonizing over-the-top facial expressions. I found it somewhat unbelievable, though, somewhat unbelievable that this newly married guy, Alex, he steps out of his car, kisses his new wife so passionately in the doorway, and then within 3 minutes becomes completely irrational and overcome with nostalgia. And it's most likely brought on, of course, by his mother's supernatural force, because we are in the Twilight Zone. So, you know, it has to be brought on by that. And I can understand why his bride of only, 20, 30 minutes was so distraught and spooked out. But I had to laugh. I really did have to laugh at the expressions, their facial expressions. She was real good at that. But she was seeing her husband sinking back into his childhood while the house's contents were changing into vintage items right before her eyes. And then we find out at the end that it really was Alex who was willing himself back to his childhood, not his mother's doing. But his obsession with Mommy almost reminded me of Psycho, the movie Psycho with Norman Bates. He couldn't let go of his mother either. You know,
Every
and unfortunately,
boy loves his mother.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, Mama. Hey, Mama. But
just missing the Psycho music and the lightning at the end of the episode would have been just perfect for this.
Well, unfortunately, this episode should have been creepier than it was, you know. I mean, it wasn't as creepy as Psycho, that's for sure. It should have been a little creepier. I mean, there was a little bit of a chill factor, you know. Not enough, as far as I'm concerned, but Mother Walker in this episode, she looked more bored and stern than scary. I mean, she didn't like
to
smile.
Why'd you bring me back, son? I didn't want to come back.
Like, I was perfectly happy, you know. I was hanging out, you know, up there with Cary Grant and whatever. I mean, but she didn't. She definitely never smiled for her photos. I mean, she was very stern, you know. And I don't know. She didn't scare me. I didn't find this, you know, all that spooky, I guess you could say. There's a one-hour episode in season four titled "The Incredible World of Horace Ford," and that stars Pat Hingle. And it's just like with Kick the Can, I think it was, season one or two. This episode centers around a man who longs to return to his youth. And so to me, this plot is quite overdone. The stories are becoming mediocre. I mean, I'll admit that I felt sorry for the new bride, and I wanted to slap some sense into Alex, but she said she waited 12 years to marry him because he was such a mama's boy. So wasn't she like a little bit of a fool? I mean, she should have seen some of this lunacy coming. I don't know. But anyway, Alex Nichol, he played Alex Walker. And he died in 2010. He was 85 when he died. And Felix Thaxter played his wife, Virginia. And she died, I think, last August or something, at the age of 92, right before the age of 92. But for those who remember the first Christopher Reeve Superman movie in 1978, you may recall that baby Superman was found and adopted by Mr. and Mrs. Kent, and Glenn Ford played Pa Kent. Mm-hmm. Well, Felix Thaxter played Ma Kent. So that's just something to look for next time you watch that movie. Anyway, not one of the best episodes, but not one of the worst. I'm giving it a 2 rating for average. And I do want to, before I go on, want to welcome Felix. Hey, Felix. So glad to see you here. And why is Dave here? Dave's here?
Boy, it must have ended early for you, Dave. What's up?
Hi, guys. I went out to a 40th anniversary wedding. We started the evening, because the main host is diabetic, we started the evening meal at 6:30, well, 7 o'clock by the time we ate. So it was all done and dusted by 11 o'clock, and I've just been dropped off home. So although I haven't watched the episode and I can't contribute much, I thought I'd drop in and see what was happening.
Well, awesome. Oh, I'm so glad you're here. Oh, we have people here. We have Felix here, and we have Sonny here from the Yahoo group. Sonny's here, and we have Lewis here. He's a new member. So we've got lots of people here. I'm glad you dropped by. Wonderful. Well, did you have a good time?
You can just sit. You can sit back and have another glass of wine.
Have another glass.
Another. That's the operative word. Another. Yeah.
It sounds like you had a good time, though.
I did indeed. No driving. I got a lift home, so I'm a very happy young man. So, well, let's forget the young, but I feel it.
Well, this episode could relate to you there, Dave.
Young
yeah,
man's fancy,
backwards.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh. Oh, I'm feeling
inside, you're young, Dave. You're a young man.
That's right. And Felix said he'll have a nice Merlot. So everybody's looking to drink with you, Dave. All right. Well, Robert, you're up, boy.
Oh, really? Am I? Okay.
Yes, you are.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, as I said earlier, this had to be one of Rod's longest ones again.
Oh,
of course,
yeah.
I don't know why he has to feel that. Like it's a good life, has to explain and put everything out on the table for her. But, I mean, we could have pretty much figured that out. But, of course, I miss him in the fourth season because I don't know why they went back to, you know, the way he would introduce episodes season one, season two. I liked it better in season three where he was part of the background, and unfortunately,
yeah, me too. I really did. I like that better. I like seeing them.
Yeah, on season four, we're up to Death Ship now, and we're kind of trudging along during season four with a lot of these episodes on the the written part of the board. But am I delaying this? I must be. Anyway. Just to come down, when Kick the Can was this season?
Oh, that's right. You're right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And it's basically what this is this another version of Kick the Can. It very much feels like that. That's what this episode was pretty much about. About, you know, Alex wanted to go back to his childhood and just couldn't face reality as we know it today. What's interesting is it asks a lot of questions. It don't really answer them for us. I mean, the scene where we could tell that Alex was still a boy at heart. He never grew up. You know, he could never shed the past dominance of his mother. And it's interesting where we feel that it was the mother that was doing this. That it actually, as you said, Lynn, it was Alex that was doing this. You know, when the time came to choose between his resurrected mother or his newly married wife, he chose to live in the past with his mother.
It was all in his mind.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, was it purely his desire that caused the house to revert back to the past? Or was it the spirit of the house that did that? Now, see, was it everything that the house took from the mother and Alex, thereby going back into the past, is why the house changed? Also, now that he's a boy again, when he goes outside, does he become an adult again? What era does he end up in?
Yeah,
is he
yeah.
25 years ago, you know, let's go get ice cream, go to the zoo, and all this stuff he tells her? Yeah, but if you step outside the door, are you going to stay that young kid? Are you back in whatever your 1930s or whatever? Or are you still in the present? See, that's another question that is out there that's not answered.
And, so, and you realize Bear Fan Ron has a comment for you.
Well, he always does.
Hi, Ron.
I have a comment for Ron. Hi, there. You mentioned Psycho. I'll put that on later on to reality. Mm-hmm. I do have a scene from that one.
Here we have a quiet little motel, when in fact it has now become known as the scene of the crime.
You have a vacancy?
Oh, we have 12 vacancies.
You know, this is the first place that looks like it's hiding from the world.
I think that we're all in our private traps, clamped in them. And none of us can ever get out.
Is anyone at home? Oh, that must be my mother.
Is anything wrong?
Am I acting as if there's something wrong?
She's not missing so much as she's run away.
Put me down! Mother! Oh, God! Mother!
What are you running away from?
She looked like a wrong one to you.
It's not as if she were a maniac. She just goes a little mad sometimes.
Why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
But actually, this episode reminded me of the Wild Wild West episode called The Night of the Man-Eating House. It was Season 2, Episode 40. And it's where Jim West and Artemis Gordon, of course, Ross Martin, is in an upcoming episode that we reviewed called Death Ships. That's
mm-hmm.
later on down the line.
Two episodes. Yeah.
Yep. It's been a night in a haunted house with a prisoner, and the prisoner transforms back to his younger self. It turns out that the house was owned by his parents, and at times you could hear a woman crying, which turned out to be the spirit of his dead mother. It seemed the son took the blame for something that his father did, and he unjustly went to prison for. So, and the power of the house sucked the life of people that were in the house, thereby transferring that essence into her son, and then bringing her son, you know, he comes in as a prisoner. He doesn't tell anybody that that was his old house. They have to find that out later on. And then he turns back into his 30-some years old.
Okay. Yeah.
So very much a connection to this.
Very reminiscent, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's other movies that have evil spirits in them, too. You might remember House, William Cat.
Mm-hmm.
That one, not the greatest of horror movies, to say. But the guy that played Bull in Night Court was in
Oh, yeah. Oh, I
Richard
like
Mall.
Yep,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I forgot his name. Thank you.
Also, Poltergeist with Jeb F. Williams. And there's also other ones. Hell House is another one that came in, in the 60s or something like that. That had Roddy McDowall in it, if I remember correctly, from that one. So.
Oh, I love him. Felix says he didn't like this episode. He gives it a half a star.
Mm.
Half a
star. When I went along with you, I give it a 2. Out of 5. I was being generous with this episode, unfortunately. Okay, Bobby, all yours.
All righty, Robert. Three bad episodes in a row. Three. The third bad episode we've had on this show consecutively, and we've got one of the worst ever coming up in a few weeks. And the other ones are pretty mediocre to my mind. So it's perfectly clear, it has been for some time, that the Twilight Zone is past its prime and really doesn't have a whole lot to offer anymore. Yes, indeed, there are some classic episodes coming up, one of my all-time favorites in Season 5, a couple of other ones, and even a couple in the dreadful Season 4, the hour-long episodes, but basically this series is over, and why not? I mean, after all, in those days on TV, they were doing 34 and 35 episodes a season. So even though we are in Season 3, in reality, we're approaching the end of Season 4. If it was on TV today, they would have already been through 4 seasons, only doing about 24, 25, 26 episodes a season now on TV at the most. And so all of the good ideas are really gone, and it's obvious, and it's painful to watch that. And is this series really a classic TV series if it falls apart that badly? I'm not suggesting that you wipe out all the good times, but it really is kind of sad. And it's going to get a lot worse, and that's what really bothers me about this. 3 terrible episodes in a row. If I were watching TV today, and I watched a TV series that did 3 of these lousy stories in a row, I'd probably give up on it. I'd probably stop watching it because I would figure they've got nothing left to offer. And this episode is just another example. I mean, people give it too much of a pass. This business about going back and using old plot lines again and again and again and again, especially when they're not that good to begin with. And I kept thinking to myself, what is a really good one-word description for this episode? And I came up with it. It's trite. That's what it is. And I went on the internet to find a definition of trite. And the definition of trite is overused and consequently of little import, lacking originality or freshness. And that's a perfect example of this episode. There's nothing new about it, and I really wish that Rod Serling and his writer Richard Matheson get over this terrible obsession with going back to childhood. It is absolutely absurd. I can understand doing it once or even twice, but not again and again and again. And this notion that you'll find instant happiness if you go back to your childhood is absurd. Not everybody has a good memory of their childhood. Some people have horrible childhoods and are abused, sexually abused and physically abused and verbally abused and have terrible times. Some are hungry and don't have anywhere to live. But in the Twilight Zone, all you got to do is go back, whether it's Kick the Can or this episode or any other one, and you can just that will solve everything. Just go back and be a kid again. And as I said in my review, the only reason to go back and be a kid again, if you could do it, is to avoid dying, to stay young forever, or to avoid getting sick, as people do when they get older. And so there really isn't any reason to go back there. As for this absolutely dreadful story, it's simply ridiculous. First of all, the husband is a total wuss from the time the story begins, before he ever sees his mother again. Just at the beginning, it's obviously, even if he hadn't gotten obsessed with his long-gone mother, his new wife was pushing him around. In the first few minutes of the story, she's telling them what they're going to do and when to do it and how to do it, and he's just standing there like a moron. So obviously he's not ready to be a husband or a man. So I don't really think it matters whether mommy shows up or not. And then, and as Linda's already mentioned, I mean, the actress, she's a good actress, but I mean, in this episode, all these ridiculous faces and standing there and making her eyes real wide, and she just can't believe what she's seeing. I have a clue for her. Just turn around and get out of there in a hurry. And just tell him that, you know, if that's how he feels about it, he's done. But to stand there just to fill time up for a half an hour and take this over and over and over again is utterly absurd. So I think, I mean, he sees his mother and he wets the floor immediately. What is wrong with him? Does he really want to go back to his childhood? You know, if this story was done today, the way TV is so graphic today, I'd have to wonder whether he just wants to go back to his childhood or he really has got a thing for his mother. I mean,
Oedipus
the story,
complex, probably.
He disappears into the bedroom with her. I don't, are they sleeping together or what? I know he's just a little kid, but it's pretty bizarre. And I just think that the whole thing is just absurd. And one of the things I hate most about, and it's not only Twilight Zone, but any program I'm watching, any drama, is I totally despise when there is no character to like. Now, that may only be true of me, but I get involved in stories when there's a character I care about, somebody I'm worried about or something. I mean, not to compare this to classic episodes, but, you know, back in time enough, unless you really cared about him, whether or not about Henry Venus, about whether or not he was going to survive a nuclear war. And The Hitchhiker really cared about her and whether or not she was being followed by some unsavory-looking individual. And there are lots of classic episodes where you really get involved. I don't get involved in the story when I basically don't like the character and I don't care what happens to him. From the minute this began, I really didn't give a damn about him at all. I thought to myself, you want to go live with your mother? Go live with your mother. Don't tell me about it. And have a good time. So there's nothing in it for me. I don't care what happens to him. He lost his new wife, and he deserved to, and basically that's about it. So it's just it's a lousy episode. It really scares me to think that this might have been put in the hour-long season because I found it absolutely brutal to sit and watch it. I just hated every minute of it. And if it had been an hour long, imagine we would have had another 20, 25 minutes of him standing there looking at her picture and looking down at the floor and looking like he's going to cry and the wife opening her eyes as wide as possible and not believing what she's saying. It would have been absolutely ridiculous. I gave it a one. I have no idea what I was thinking, why I gave it a one. I agree with the comment before that it probably deserves a half. We don't have a one-half rating, but we should. And one half would probably be sufficient for this. But I'm not even sure about that.
Hey,
it's
Bob,
just, huh?
Ron, Bear Fan Ron, says he agrees with you. There's no likable characters. And he said, thank God that our show has you because he hates everyone else here.
Because what?
He hates everyone else here. He's just kidding. He laughed about afterwards.
Well, I just thought
Ron
just,
loves Ron. Thinks you're terrific.
I just tell it like I see it. And, of course, over at the good old Internet Movie Database, it got like a, I don't know, almost a 7 out of 10 rating. And there was only 4 reviews, and they loved it. They thought it was a touching story. About
that was all
man,
the mama's kids that came
about
over
a man and his mother, and it's like pure nonsense.
Boy,
it's utterly ridiculous. But my question, if I had a question for the writer, is that why did this man get married in the first place? What was the point? Why? You mean to tell me that he really, why get married? If you're not prepared to be a man, and you're not prepared to be a husband, and you're not going to give to your wife what husbands give to wives, then why even bother? There's no obvious motivation. There's no reason for him to do it in the first place. He should have just, you know, stayed in that house like Norman Bates, and after she dies, he can do what Norman Bates did. He can keep her corpse down in the basement,
and
he can talk to it forever. And it's just an idiotic story. But I'm really disturbed, and I know I say this every show, but it's just a shame, really, to see a series like this kind of descend from week to week. And I keep wondering what the interest of Rod Serling was in this series. It just feels to me like, as it went on from the late in season 3 into 4 and into 5, that he started to really lose interest in it. It really wasn't the kind of originality and groundbreaking drama that there was at the beginning. Now, it's easy for me to say because I don't have to come up with something original every week. And I agree that, you know, if he was alive, he'd say, well, you try and see what you can come up with. But I sense that there isn't the kind of fascination with the series that there was in the early days. And I look ahead, especially, and Robert and Linda know what episode I'm talking about. We've got more comedy coming up in about a month, and that is just dreadful beyond belief. And it's just a shame to see it decline like this. As for this episode, just trite is the word. That's what it is. There's nothing original about it and nothing interesting about it. So I will take my 1 point and turn it into a half. I think a half a point is sufficient. All right,
Tommy. Like,
yeah.
I was thinking maybe one problem with the Twilight Zone, and actually some of the shows seem to act a little differently than they did in the past, where they change showrunners and they change writers. They just get rid of the old writers and bring in some new writers, as we would say, fresh blood. I don't think Twilight Zone ever brought in fresh blood.
Oh, I agree.
To keep it young. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's very tempting to not change writers when you're a success and people love it and, you know, you're getting enough good ratings to stay on the air. And nobody particularly, there weren't shows like this back then. There wasn't an internet for people to talk about it. And as long as it's going well, why change anything? Everybody seems to be happy. So if they want to keep doing the same story over and over again, let them keep doing it as long as people are willing to watch it.
And you
that's
know what?
Fine. But I don't think you could blow this by anybody today, yeah?
Mm-hmm. You know what? Ron brings up a good point. He said he bets that Rod got set up with bullshit, and he probably did, you know, because he was getting a lot of crap from the, you know, from the higher-ups, you know, censoring different things that he did and not
wanting well, the worst part
stories
is that
to air.
CBS gave him no money. That's a complete disgrace.
Right, because he didn't
have
much. Here's
$10, Rod. Do what you can with it.
Yeah, right. His budget was so low between the censors and the budget. I mean, it was
When you consider that it costs millions of dollars now just to put on a half an hour sitcom and nobody even blinks about it, it's utterly disgraceful that that is the worst thing done to this series, to pull the plug on the money and simply say, I mean, it's a science fiction series, too, and just, you know, I'll give him credit for one thing. I would have told them where to shove it, and I would have said, you know what, you run the show. I would have walked out on it, because there's no way in the world. They made money off of it, and it's simply disgraceful what they did. It's absolutely
awful. You see how they used props over and over again. They used the same settings, the same everything, because poor Rod is like, well, you know, why get something else when you already have this and you already have that? Why can't we use this over and over again, like 20, 30 times? And
well, there is another show that did do that, and Dave would agree with me. It's called Doctor Who.
Yeah,
'63.
Well, how many years did that run?
Well, they did it with a reason, of course.
Is that still running?
Of course.
Reboot series is.
Yeah.
From 2005. Still going. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't want to have the responsibility to come up with an original idea every week, and I don't expect that. I don't really mind if you take an old idea and you kind of change it a little bit, but in this series, it's just too many times. This business of going back to being a child again, this is just ludicrous. It's absolutely ridiculous. You've done it already. You've made your point. And I just wonder whether Rod Serling wanted to go back to his childhood. He should have. He only lived to be 51.
Well,
going
he wanted
to
be a Time Lord.
He
just couldn't regenerate, Bobby. That was the problem.
Well, I agree.
But, you know, it's not done. It's not done. There's still another one, I think, coming up. Short Drink from a Certain Fountain. And I think that's in season 5. I think that's season 5 with Patrick. I forget his name now. And Ruta Lee.
Oh, okay. I remember Ruta
Lee. Yeah, Short Drink from a Certain Fountain. And, you know, it's another one about going back to the childhood. So, you know, they don't stop. They don't stop at all.
Yeah, but you got to realize one thing. That was a different world back then. And a TV season had a beginning and an ending. And when you get to the next season or two seasons down the road, people don't even remember that they've already seen that. Today, with the internet and shows like this and everything, everybody knows every episode, and we can look back and go, didn't you just do that a couple weeks ago? I think back then you could pull that. You could pull that spell on anybody.
Yeah.
You could two seasons later, you could do the story, and nobody would. It looks familiar to me, but I don't think they really did it. So,
you know, my quick question to ask you guys, or at least you, Robert, or is it Bobby? Didn't you think this episode was a bit of a tragedy at the end? I mean, the thing is that the episode really is taken from the point of view of
Phyllis Baxter. You're saying Shakespearean? Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, since the episode seems to be taken from the point of view of Phyllis Baxter's character, which is one of the weaknesses of, the story, because the changes happen to the husband and not to the wife, but we're really seeing it from the point of view of the wife.
Yeah.
Well, I don't feel sorry for her. Well, are you suggesting I should feel sorry for her?
Well, not her. I think the husband character is supposed to be a tragic character. Her, yeah, you're supposed to feel a little bit sorry for her, but yeah, she was a bit of a...
Oh, yeah, I feel sorry for her. I mean, she was stupid enough to wait 12 years for this man, but I feel sorry that, you know, within 20 minutes of her being married, he turned into a complete ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel sorry for her in that.
Well, it's hard for me to believe that he acted like a man towards her and then all of a sudden collapsed and turned into a child.
Right.
There had to be signs early on that he was not going to be what she'd hoped he would be. I can't buy it.
Well, that's why I said within 12 years of waiting and knowing that he was so devoted to his mother, I mean, there had to have been some signs that, you know, there was a little bit of a mama's boy thing going on here, but you had to, I'm sure that she did not expect within 20 to 30 minutes of being married to this man that he was going to turn into a child again, you know, that he was going to say, that's it, I'm not leaving mama, I'm not leaving the house.
I don't think
it's like the Amityville Horror, going into the house and the house changing the person when the family moves in there.
I don't think it's a tragic ending at all. He gets what he wants and she gets to go and live with an actual man. I think it's a very upbeat ending.
If she
actually
can find one, you have to remember, she waited 12 years. I don't. I mean, if that's
she should wait another 35 years to stay away from him. I don't care how many years it is. So what?
No, but you know, I mean, she waited 12 years. God, I don't know how old they were. Oh, he was 34. He was supposed to be 34. So you have to assume she was between 32 and 34. You know, now she's got to find a guy at that point in her life, back in that day and age. You know, back in the 60s when women got married and when they were 18, 19, 20 years old. I mean, it's not going to be easy for her.
No. You know, I mean, I think I like this episode a little bit better than you guys. Oh, but then again, I haven't really been immersed in Twilight Zone like you guys have, I guess, for the past couple of years.
Oh, well, you'll have to do that. You'll have to immerse yourself.
I mean, I've seen the episodes before in the past, but I haven't really gone back to look at them most recently. I just looked at my most favorites. I mean, I don't like this episode that much more, probably marginally so more, maybe like a 2.5. But I did like Phyllis Thaxter's performance. You know, I also got a kind of, I'm trying to think of the short story about the Telltale Heart. For a minute there, for a while there, I was thinking that maybe Phyllis Thaxter was kind of, I was thinking Phyllis Thaxter was, this was a manifestation of her guilt. Because you get the impression that she really pulled the husband away from the mother. But it's never really developed how she did it. But, you know, there's a scene where she's talking to her husband saying, you know, you're mine now. You're not your mother's, and I'm going to keep you. So you get the impression that she did a lot of work to pull him towards her side. And, you know, for a while there, I thought maybe there was a manifestation of guilt going on. That's why she was seeing all these things happening and changing. But I think I do agree that it was kind of like there's this Twilight Zone-ish effect of that house and the fact that he came back. I mean, the mother was supposed to have been dead for about a year, right?
Yeah.
And then they returned to the house to sell it.
Died, yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it's not a strong episode. I think it had a lot. It could have had more promise than it presented. But, I mean, I didn't hate it as much. I really liked Phyllis Baxter's performance. I think that's what probably made it a little better for me.
You didn't mind, what about all those crazy faces she was making?
I kind of liked it. You know, I mean, sometimes I kind of like that theatrical acting over than more, method acting.
Yeah, a little over the top kind
of. She's got to deliver a lot of information in a half hour, so she's got to show these reactions to all these things changing. I mean, there's a scene where the man who's selling the house picks up the phone and she sees that it changes.
Yeah,
so now I'm trying to remember, does it change back? I mean,
the phone didn't change it to the toy phone from long distance call. That would have been real funny.
Yeah. Her eyes almost plugged out of her head. My God, I was like, hey, put your eyes back in your head.
Yeah, but the point is, did the phone actually change or was it in her mind? When the man picked up the phone, he picked it up as a regular phone.
Yeah, see, then you don't know. You don't know. That's because she was in the Twilight Zone. So you don't know if it did or it didn't. But I guess it did. I guess it did. And that had to be pretty freaky for her.
Kind of have a reminiscence of Static to it, too. Remember at the end of Static?
Uh-huh.
They go back in the past again. Yeah.
Yeah, another one. Yeah, these people going back in the past. Absolutely. And Dave, you didn't get a chance to watch it again? It's Dave here.
Sorry, I was muted. I didn't get a chance to watch it. No, I'm sorry. I'm not sure whether I missed a lot listening to what's being said. But, was it episode 99? Season 3, episode 99. First aired 11th of May 1962. And I say all that for those people listening to the recording later. But, no, I mean, written by Robert Matheson, of course, who... I still think of a great writer from, what was the famous one he did?
I Am Legend.
I Am Legend, yeah.
The Nightmare on 20,000 Feet.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've got great admiration for him as a writer. But from what the guys have said here on the call, probably not the finest hour on the Twilight Zone. So, I know Bobby has said they've not been great. Was it? 3 or 4 episodes on the run. But I think next week, without jumping the gun, as it were, we've got a great title. If I say I Sing the Body Electric, a lot of people will know what that means.
Mm-hmm. 2 weeks from now,
I have to dig up that song from Fame for that show. If anybody knows what I'm talking about.
No, no. Is that Ralph Waldo Emerson or something?
Based on a poem.
Yep.
Yeah.
By Ralph Waldo Emerson, And that's 2 weeks from now. On the 4th, May 4th, we're going to be doing that one.
Day for my birthday. Yay!
What is it? What?
My birthday's May the 5th.
Your birthday's May the 5th?
Yep, and I turn before Doctor Who turns 50. I turn 50.
Woo!
I've been here half a century, but it feels like 2 centuries here.
I've seen a lot. I'm older than a lot of trees in my backyard.
Well, what about my birthday? I'm turning 40 this coming week.
April 25th is Bobby's birthday. Woo! Woo!
Make sure you put cake on the site for Bobby. Happy birthday or pre-birthday. We're getting old, Bobby.
I'm turning 40.
Actually, you should say 39 to Jack Benny's age.
No, 40s are.
No, what you should say is that you're in your late
30s. Late 30s, that's right.
You know, I'm in my late 30s. I'm 42, so.
Like the old Jack Benny. What was Jack Benny? Never passed 29. Yeah. Oh, everybody's birthday's coming. Dave, when's your birthday?
I will shame you all. I'll be 67 in November.
67?
Yeah. Old man.
You don't look a day over 49.
Oh,
really?
I'm not that old.
Yeah, gosh, I've seen your picture. You don't look a day over 49.
Oh, what a lovely woman.
You handsome devil. Oh, Dave is a hot stud. You don't look a day over 49.
Oh, and by the way, Bear fan Ron, don't embarrass me on your show tonight. Now that you know when my birthday is, because I will be listening.
Oh,
to
now he knows. Do it, Ron. Now he knows. So your birthday is May 5th, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, and Bobby's is April 25th. Oh my God, we got all these celebrations coming up.
Yeah, it's one of these amazing facts, Lynn. People have a birthday every year.
No. Where did you read that on the internet? That's right, because they can't print anything on the internet that's not true. That's right. All right, everybody. Well, anyway, we'll see you all. Our next show is 2 weeks from now, so we'll see you all 2 weeks. May 4th.
Do you want me to bring Rod back for our next time?
Yes, actually, I would like you to bring Rob back. He hasn't left yet, has he?
Nah, he's still
stop in the studio and ask him to come back and make one more comment for us.
Okay. We got him propped against the desk here, so.
Oh, yes, I would appreciate that. Prop him up.
Rod Serling, the creator of Twilight Zone, will tell you about next week's story after this word from our alternate sponsor. And now, Mr. Serling.
The name Ray Bradbury has become synonymous with a new horizon of American writing. Next week on The Twilight Zone, we present a typical Bradbury tale. It also has typical Bradbury ingredients, including a grandmother building a factory. Now, if this doesn't intrigue you, then I'm simply not doing justice to a most intriguing tale. I hope you'll join us next week for I Sing the Body Electric.
There it is.
Hi, Ron. Thank you, Ron. We really appreciate you stopping by. Isn't that nice that Ron stopped by for that? He's a wonderful man. Wonderful man. So anyway, okay, so 2 weeks from now, on Saturday, May 4th, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, I Sing the Body Electric. So happy birthday to Bobby for April 25th, and we will see Robert before the 5th, and we'll talk to Robert before the 5th, but we'll say happy birthday anyway. Anybody else's birthday is coming up? Happy birthday, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody. Well, I'm so glad. Ron, thank you for joining us. Sonny, thank you for joining us. Felix, what did he say? Shane Bradbury didn't get a chance. Yeah, you know, I agree with that. Felix said it's a shame that Bradbury didn't get a chance to write more episodes for the Twilight Zone. And he's right, because he did submit a lot of episodes and they didn't get taken. So I agree. But Felix, thank you so much for joining us. And absolutely want to thank Lewis for being here. Lewis, I'm glad you're a new caller, and it was wonderful to have you here. You added so much to the show. So I hope you'll be here again in 2 weeks, if you can.
I'll do my best.
All right. So everybody have a wonderful rest of their weekend. And Ron, we're glad to do the show, and I'm glad you're here. And we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. And remember, Mother's Day is coming up next month.
That's right. Happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there.
That didn't sound right.
Hey, you mothers. Happy Mother's
Day. As old Snagglepuss would say, exit stage left.
Hey,
bye, everybody.